Welcome back to Brains and Guts, the GI Innovation Podcast from the American College of Gastroenterology. I am Vladimir Kushner, the chair of the ACG Innovation and Technology Committee. Today, we are excited to welcome my friend Dr. Austin Chang to the podcast. Dr. Chang is the Chief Medical Officer of the Endoscopic Arm of Medtronic, as well as Associate Professor of Medicine at Jefferson University Hospital in Philadelphia. At Medtronic, Dr. Chang provides medical expertise on product development, clinical trials, and provider education. In this conversation, we dive into the industry perspective on artificial intelligence in gastroenterology. Dr. Chang shares lessons on developing tools like GI Genius, barriers to widespread adoption of artificial intelligence in GI, and what role physicians should play in designing and testing new AI applications. He also shares his thoughts on how to conduct research in the age of artificial intelligence, given how fast leaps in innovation are happening. We hope you enjoy.
Dr. Chang, thanks again for joining us and sharing your expertise. My first question to you, as both a physician and a chief medical officer in industry, how do you envision artificial intelligence transforming clinical practice in gastroenterology in the next 5 years?
Thank you so much, first of all, for having me. I think it's so hard to say because AI is moving at such a quick pace, especially like what we're seeing in terms of consumer usage of AI. So I can only imagine how much different things will be in 5 years from now. But I definitely feel that, you know, right now within the GI space, we're very much still focused on polyp detection. But really, I think we're going to see a whole host of other applications focus on other indications as well, applied to a variety of different, you know, endoscopic and non-endoscopic devices. And I would also say that there's going to be more of a focus on automation, whether it's documentation or triage or other elements of our clinical workflow to help improve efficiency and reduce our cognitive burden and really enhance our clinical judgment.
That's great. We all look at you as someone who probably has more view of the future than the rest of us, especially being part of people developing the technology. What unique insights has your role at Medtronic given you about how industry is shaping the trajectory of AI innovation and gastroenterology in particular?
Yeah, I think one thing that I realized that, so much of our focus is on the science and on the clinical utility of AI, but really to be able to have AI be successful and have true clinical impact, you know, around the world, it's also about kind of the commercial viability and scalability in our, how well we can integrate AI into our practices. I think that what I'm trying to say is that it's not just about clinical benefit. There's so much more that goes into it that determines the success of any technology, not just AI, to help promote adoption and also get things through the regulatory process and make sure that it aligns with what people want and need across different types of practice settings and geographies. And really, at the end of the day, it's not just about industry or clinicians, it's really the collaboration of the two, because that sort of partnership is really critical in making sure that something really gets adopted and ultimately helps benefit patients.
You mentioned collaboration. So the next question that comes to mind is, what lessons have you learned from the deployment of tools like GI Genius, for example, that should inform how future AI collaborations, especially between academia and industry, should happen? You know, one of the things you mentioned is that it's not just the clinical data, there's the commercial viability. So can you elaborate a little bit more on that? And are these lessons what you've learned from GI Genius?
Yeah, I think like many other types of technologies, even beyond GI Genius, it's about forming that partnership early on, even before the product is introduced to the market, getting a sense of what the unmet clinical needs are and, you know, what the barriers that we anticipate would be to greater adoption. I think that those are really important. I think for GI Genius, right, like on top of that, the future of the product in part is also about co-developing applications for various different indications. So we know that we can't do it all, and we started in one place with fall detection, and we're hoping to, you know, be able to host a variety of different applications on a platform we call AI Access. And so we're hoping that that collaboration, you know, carries forward. And, you know, I think the other thing that I've realized is that, you know, with GI Genius, there's a lot of evidence that we've generated, but also, you know, real world evidence that comes into play. And it's the combination of the two that I think people look to, not just one or the other when determining whether or not to adopt something, at least for its clinical benefit. And yeah, I think that we've learned a lot of lessons along the way about, you know, how there's a large range of what people want and need and how to integrate it into their practices and what sort of commercial model works best for different centers or practices.
Thank you for sharing that. One of the things you mentioned was barriers. And from the industry lens, what is the biggest barrier to widespread adoption of AI in GI, in your opinion? Is it clinical skepticism, reimbursement, workflow integration, or really something else?
I think it's a little bit of everything. I think that, you know, there is a cultural aspect to this as well. You know, AI is new to everybody, and we're all getting used to, you know, accepting AI and knowing how to work together with AI and seeing it not as something that will replace clinicians, but kind of sort of like an additional colleague that we can refer to. But on top of that, yes, there's definitely other barriers like regulatory barriers, how the FDA and other regulatory bodies are processing, you know, new technologies and evaluating them, and how to make sure that the iterative nature of AI is accounted for in that process. And also, you know, currently there isn't any reimbursement for additional AI technologies. And so how do we work towards that? Because it's something that I don't think has been widely explored in the past. I think there are a couple examples out there in other specialties that we can look to as precedents. But, you know, there's still a lot of work that needs to be done there. And yeah, integrating it into our workflow is something that, you know, we also need to clarify further.
Thanks, Austin. So you actually started answering my next question. So outside the US, there is a wider variety of AI tools available already for gastroenterology. We can talk about polyp characterization, not just polyp detection, so computer-aided diagnostics, and also some upper GI algorithms. And certainly every time we open a journal, there's at least one or two papers in there about using AI in one part of endoscopy or another. And most of these tools aren't available in the US, I think largely for regulatory reasons. So can you expand on that and kind of give us a roadmap for what you think we're going to be able to get in the United States that we read about in journals right now in the next 2, 3, 4 years?
Yeah, I think that you bring up a great point. It's that, you know, there's a lot of algorithms that are being developed, and often, you know, what's being published is a proof of concept, and the regulatory thresholds that different countries have are different, and sometimes the requirement is that there needs to be, you know, certain types of criteria that are met before something gets cleared by the FDA. You know, it's not just one center or one type of patient. It's often like a multi-center type of situation, and there's a lot of attention towards that currently because you know, we're at there's a great opportunity to really impact how we go about handling AI and making sure that it's equitable and responsibly made. But yeah, I think that part of the challenge is that the FDA is working alongside us to figure out, you know, how to evaluate these technologies. But what I can say in terms of the future is I feel that there is a lot of potential across the entire GI tract, not just confined to, you know, screening colonoscopies. And so we're already seeing certain innovations applied to, you know, different parts of the gut and different modalities as well. And, you know, my hope personally is that, you know, one day we can have AI help inform kind of how we plan on doing our interventions and how to make interventions safer. And I do see, you know, one day maybe if there's any sort of integration with robotics, that could also be something that that, you know, can help with automation or other types of assistive tools like that.
Well, that would be fascinating. Dr. Chang, do you feel we are striking the right balance today between regulatory rigor, patient safety on one side, and then innovation and bringing new tools to the market on the other side? And this is kind of a follow-up to, you know, Vlad's question with having things outside the U.S. more than inside the U.S. Where do you think the regulatory balance is today?
Oh, that's a great question. It's really hard to pinpoint. I mean, I think there's always work to be done on making sure that, you know, we are getting new technologies and innovations, you know, onto the shelf while making sure that they're safe and you know, thoroughly evaluated. And for something like AI, I think that, as I alluded to earlier, there's this iterative nature to it that we also, you know, traditional regulatory processes don't really are able to handle. And so, you know, I think we'll continue to see how this plays out. And you know, I'm hoping that we are able to achieve both, you know, both making sure that things can go to market quickly, are generalizable for, you know, large portions of the population, but are also, you know, safe.
Okay. And a couple of things you mentioned, multiple iterations, also you mentioned hard to predict the future with something that's changing so fast. And some of the challenges we're seeing in doing research on AI is that it could take, there might be multiple iterations developed before clinical outcomes can be obtained. What can you tell us about that? And the challenges in doing research today on AI tools in medicine?
Yeah, I think that that's a really great question. I think that, you know, on top of just regulatory processes, like how we go about handling clinical research around this space is also, you know, going to evolve. I would think that, you know, just like what regulatory bodies are doing in terms of having predetermined, you know, change control plans to get things through without, if it's minor tweaks are being made to algorithms or to some of the AI technologies out there, that they can get cleared more quickly. Hopefully there are ways that we can, you know, ensure that, you know, the clinical research can also keep up with that. Yeah, I think it's a challenging question to address because, yeah, I hear that feedback a lot that, you know, the algorithms are constantly improving. And by the time that you're studying one and putting the outcomes out there, there's already a new algorithm out there and not necessarily applicable. The evidence may not necessarily be applicable to kind of the newest technology. So, you know, perhaps there's like a modular approach or some way to, you know, isolate the areas that are changing. And also there might need to be some cultural changes that we need to adopt to in terms of how we interpret the research that's coming out and understand that, you know, that this is a limitation.
And what do you see the role of the clinician in that, in this, you know, process, and especially when it comes to research in artificial intelligence and collaboration with industry?
I mean, I know I'm a bit biased, but I feel like it's really important for clinicians to be involved early on in the process in co-developing applications and, you know, having our insights and inputs into, you know, the development of an algorithm. so that we can ensure that it is something that is applicable to as many patients as possible, and that they're, you know, that we can mitigate any other risks like that. And so it's on us, you know, the industry partners, to engage clinicians early and also educate everybody on how to not only develop the AI, but also help scale it, and, you know, how to, again, overcome some of the barriers to adoption, whether it's cultural, whether it's institutional. I think that there's a lot more education that should be done to help everybody understand how this ecosystem of healthcare comes together. You know, I can say from personal experience that throughout my medical training, you know, even when I was starting my faculty position, I really had no concept of how to introduce new technologies into my institution. I relied on many of my senior colleagues to do so. And I think the more understanding that we have globally in our field, it'll be tremendously helpful in accelerating innovation for GI. I think other specialties arguably do this a lot better than we do. And so we all need to work on this together.
Okay. And if you could give one piece of advice to an early career gastroenterologist or a trainee who's interested in being involved in, you know, as you said, from the beginning in AI or doing research, what would be that advice? What should they do, and how can they get more involved, and what's the best way?
Yeah, I think that, you know, especially for AI, I think it's a relatively level playing field at the moment. So, you know, I feel like right now things are early in general, and it's a great opportunity to get involved and express your interest in AI and educate oneself and partner with, you know, engineers and data scientists on that. I would say, you know, learning the basics of AI data science, I think, is going to be really important moving forward, whether or not you really want to be pursuing AI as a kind of academic focus. I think it's another great avenue is to work through our societies to participate in programming and learn more that way and get involved and advocate, whether it's kind of within the actual, you know, development of AI or externally to, you know, help us with advocating for reimbursement or understanding how to, you know, accelerate innovation through, you know, legislative changes that we're working on with the Hill. But ultimately, I think that it's just really important to get involved, talk to your colleagues, talk to mentors around the country. And in terms of specifically how to partner with industry, you know, the first step would probably be to just express your interest. I think that way, you know, we are able to identify, you know, who to engage with. And if you have ideas, to always, you know, see how to collaborate. You know, I think there are a lot of opportunities out there that are worth exploring. And yeah, I think understanding more so not just the science and the medicine, but also the systems around us. And the more you understand about how things work with your, you know, with your practice, with your institution, with how our societies function, how industry functions, learning all of that and through conversations with different folks in all of these areas, I think will serve you well just in general, but also in exploring, you know, potential opportunities in AI.
Harisheng, thank you very much for sharing your wisdom and expertise. This is an area that a lot of people look up to you to learn and know what's happening and what's coming down the pipeline. Any final comments? Anything else you'd like to share?
No, thank you so much for the opportunity. I really appreciate the kind words. I mean, I think, like I said, it's not just up to one party to advance our field. I think that we all have to work together and better understand, you know, how all the different players within this ecosystem come together to make things happen. That's one of my personal goals in my role, is to be able to help bridge that gap. And I'm always open to, you know, having more conversations with everyone on, you know, how, from my perspective, how all these things come together.
Thank you for listening to Brains and Guts, the GI Innovation Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, please subscribe and drop us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also send us questions and ideas for future episodes to brainsandguts@gi.org. We look forward to talking to you soon.